This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000. This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Good afternoon to you. Denny Law filling in for the vacationing Steve Thompson. I think he's on vacation. Does anybody know if he's on vacation or not? No, we don't know. But anyway, I'm here. He'll be back, no doubt, next week. Most interesting show today, and we hope you join in on the conversation, too. The ABCs of Family Court. Brian Grogan will be hosting today. Jim Vetter, who's with the Family Law Practice Area, on the topic of the ABCs of going to family court, how to prepare. Brian, big topic. I think it's always interesting. If you guys, we could probably do a show like this every day of every week and get a lot of response. Where are we going to go with this today?
Well, we're going to try to cover some of the basics today. We're not going to drill down on too many of the specifics, but maybe to start, I'll give the listeners a little idea of who our main guest is today. Jim Vetter, partner of mine at Moss and Barnett. He began his practice as a law clerk in the Hennepin County Family Court, where he got a taste for this area. And since then, he's developed a really successful law practice as a family law specialist. He's been named as a rising star by Minnesota Law and Politics for 7 consecutive years. He focuses on really all aspects of marital dissolution. He's written a number of articles, and he's also taught continuing legal education courses to other attorneys who work in this area. So he is truly the expert. Not only that, Denny, he's an expert on coaching young kids in Little League Baseball, which it seems like maybe the Twins could use a little of that coaching help these days. Right. So we might have fielded some calls on that today as well.
And I am available if anybody's listening.
All right, very good.
Well, Jim, you know, when I was preparing for this topic, it occurred to me that people who are on the verge of divorce, you know, their marriage is coming to an end. They're probably upset and worried. They might be worried about their future. They know they need a professional to walk them through this process, but the first decision is kind of their most important. Who do they pick? How do they pick their attorney? And so maybe comment for a moment about what traits do we look for when people are choosing that specialist to help them through this game.
First and foremost, you want to find someone who's knowledgeable in the field. And I say that because so often now you've got a variety of practice areas, and some people do family law, some people don't, some people are generalists. I say find someone who really specializes in that area, knows the law, has experience, and someone that you're comfortable with. You know, ask people. If you know someone who's gotten a divorce or had a family law issue, ask them, who did they hire? What were they looking for? I think that's usually the best way to find a good lawyer in a family law case.
So, and you could even use some tool like Google. You could check their resume, check the firm, maybe look at some of the cases they've handled or the decisions that they've commented on in articles that they've published. So all those tools are available. All right, once you pick that specialist, and I think of them as really the professional that's going to help them walk through this process, the first thing that occurs to me that's going to happen is there's will be an initial consultation. And that's got to be intimidating for people to come to a law office, sit down, and start burying their soul about their marriage. How do they prepare for that, or what do they bring? You know, walk us through what that first meeting is like.
I tell you, that first meeting is a very important meeting for both the attorney and the client. One, you're trying to establish whether or not this is a relationship that's going to work or not. And from the client's perspective, you want to walk out of there knowing, okay, here's kind of a path that we can go down. Here's a good idea of how this is going to work. And I often tell people when they come in for that first meeting, there are a number of things that I'd like them to bring. One, on the financial side, come in, bring me a financial statement so I know what assets we're looking at. You know, it can be as simple as just handwriting out, here's what I've got. I've got a home. I've got a car. I've got a retirement account. Here are the values. Here are the encumbrances. To the extent that you've got a job, what kind of income do you earn? Easy things that most people know off at the top of their head. Probably a more difficult thing for people to do at that first meeting is to come up with a list of what are your expenses? you know, what on a monthly basis, what do you spend? I think a lot of us probably have a general idea, but we can't off the top of our head say, oh, I spend $5,000, $6,000 a month. On the child-related issues, one, that's pretty easy because people can rattle that off the top of their head. Who are your kids? What relationships have each of you had with the kids? Who's been responsible for what? Where are the kids at developmentally? You know, are we talking about teenage kids? Are we talking about young kids?
Jim, when you talk about children, obviously that adds a whole layer of complexity. Do you get into issues in that first meeting about maybe children with special needs, whether it be developmental or educational or even medical needs? Are those things that you need to know in that first meeting to try to help start the preparation for the case?
I think it does. At that first meeting, people typically want a game plan. I mean, how are we going to move forward with this? What's going to happen? So you want to gather as much information as you can. And if you don't have a central piece like that, like you would ask Brian, if someone has a special needs, well, what special needs do they have? How has that been addressed? Who's worked with the school or the special needs instructor? You know, these are things that you need to get. Otherwise, your game plan's going to be off. You're going to have a game plan that might be good for a typical five-year-old, but for a special needs five-year-old, not so good.
Mm-hmm. So at this meeting, I guess the next question becomes maybe from the perspective of the attorney is, do we have a situation where the parties are in reasonable agreement on some of these terms? And this might be one where you would serve as the professional that would help to paper up this deal, put it in place, but maybe there wouldn't be a need to go into court over it. Or you can probably size it up and say it's likely that this couple is going to be far apart on these issues, whether it's, you know, parental visitation rights or just financial issues. Do you size that up right away? And then how does it differ based on couples that are on the same page or ones that aren't?
Yeah, and you usually can size that up pretty quickly into the conversation. People have a pretty good sense, and I usually will ask right out, you know, have you and your spouse spoken about what you'd like to do with this divorce proceeding? And if they say, well, yeah, and, you know, here's kind of what we've talked about. Here's what we'll do with the house. Here's what we're going to do with the kids. To me, that's probably the best way to go. Now, obviously, people are getting divorced because they don't talk so well. So in a lot of situations, that's not real practical. In that situation, I like to ask, is there an attorney involved on the other side? If there is, I'd like to call that attorney right away and say, okay, how can we work through some of these issues so that we don't get these people into a posture where it's just pure litigation. We're looking to get things resolved, not have this fight, not have this battle that really takes not just a financial toll but an emotional toll on people. I mean, going to court is probably one of the more difficult things you could do and put that in a family law setting, which is already emotionally charged anyway, and it can really be explosive. So you want to avoid that if you can.
Now, so maybe when you get to that first meeting and the people come in, do you ever have to serve, maybe step out of your role as legal advisor and step into a counselor role if the people are on the fence about whether they are going to get divorced? They think they might want to. They want to explore the options. Do you end up providing advice to them about trying to avoid going down the road of getting into divorce court? Because in some cases, once you go down that road, it's tough to turn back. Things get said. So how do you handle that issue?
Brian, that's an excellent question. And that is one of the first questions you have to ask. Is this marriage irretrievably broken? Can it be saved? And if it can be saved, what can we do to help save it? Can we get you into a marriage counselor? If so, you know, I've got a number of marriage counselors that we know. I can give you contact information. I'm happy to make the call.
Have you done that, Jim? Have you had that? I mean, have you saved marriages, I guess, if you can put it that way?
Denny, I have, and not often, but on a few occasions I have. And I tell you, I take great pride in that.
I bet.
Because so often people come to you and they think, oh, you're a divorce attorney. I mean, you want people to get divorced. I really don't. I mean, I'd rather see two people be happy together, living together and with their kids. I take more pride in saving a marriage than getting two people divorced.
You know what? I think on that note, that positive note, we'll take a bit of a break here and come back. We hope you join us. An interesting show. We're going to have the rest of the hour here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. We're talking today about the ABCs of family court, and we'll be right back with more Minnesota Law here on 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
The truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know a team of Moss and Barnett attorneys worked on the appeal of the case that served as the basis for the motion picture, North Country?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. The news you depend on from the WCCO news team is available right now at WCCORadio.com.
And welcome back to this portion of Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett on the show today. We're talking, by the way, about the ABCs of family court, family law. Brian Grogan is with us, along with Jim Vedder from the family law practice area of Moss and Barnett. And the most interesting topic, and if for those just joining us, if you do have a question, we're going to
have you bought furniture that
and
just
now,
falls.
The top story.
I don't know where that came from, but if you do have a question, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Brian, Jim, where do we go from here?
Well, you know, at the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, if some people today are trying to get creative, they'll go online and Google up the divorce.com or whatever the website is, and they'll find their own divorce decree or settlement document, and they'll say, I'm going to save the money. I'm not going to hire an attorney. You know, my spouse and I will just take care of this ourselves. And that's an incredibly bad idea. And Jim, maybe you could help us understand, why is this something where you really do need a pro to walk you through it?
And there are a number of really good reasons for getting an attorney involved, first and foremost. I mean, this is such an emotionally charged atmosphere to begin with. It's oftentimes hard to think straight. You want somebody who's not going to be working out of their heart, but rather out of their head. And you can't always do that when you're in the middle of this, and divorces are emotional. That's going to go without saying. This was a relationship where love was involved, and oftentimes now it's not just not love, it's the exact opposite of that. So you want to be careful that you're not being guided by guilt, you're not being guided by anger. So that's kind of the first reason. Second reason is you get these forms off of various websites, and you know some of them are all right. But so oftentimes they're confusing, and people get confused with them, and they don't know why they're checking a certain box, or they don't know what exactly the type of information that needs to go in. I can tell you this, it's harder to go back and try to fix it after it's already been done. Once that judge or referee has signed off on it, very hard to get them to go back and say, well, really it ought to be something different now. And I've seen that happen where years later somebody comes in and, one, it's hard to tell what exactly they wanted to do, and, two, it's been signed off and it's been 2-3 years since they signed it, and the judge is saying, I'm not even sure I can do anything with this. So I think that's another good reason for it. Finally, it's good to have a guide to know what is reasonable here. You know, what is family law? What should we be doing with the kids? What should we be doing with the finances? You know, should things be divided 50-50? Should there be something else? How do we calculate child support? What do we do with spousal maintenance? A number of topics that come up that, you know, really you need someone's expertise to help you with.
And when you're dealing with a divorce, it's not as if you can just hire one professional or one attorney to walk both sides through it. You really need an advocate for both sides. As a matter of fact, I don't think it's even permissible for an attorney to serve both sides on one of these divorce proceedings, correct?
Yeah, I would certainly never engage in that practice. I don't think you can. Ethically, I just don't think you can. It's too difficult to represent two people in this situation who have very divergent interests. The conflict is so clear to me that I wouldn't even try to take that upon myself because I don't think you'd be effective for either one of them at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And throw in children, like you said, it becomes even more complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Once you have kids involved as well, now you've got that extra layer of complication, and it'd be too tough. Both sides need their own advocate.
You know, Denny, when we were talking, prepping for this show today, you know, Jim started to talk to me about issues involving children that I would never have thought of. And I think that's one issue that speaks to why a professional is needed. Things about custody, visitation, anticipated costs in the future, present value of funds that will be needed 10 years down the road to fund needs for the child as they approach high school. There's so many issues that someone who has experience and's been through it can provide. And I guess that just speaks to the issue of why a professional is required.
Yeah, and Brian, that's an excellent point. You know, there are so many little issues within these things, and Keep in mind, you put together a final divorce decree here. This is something you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life in all likelihood because, it's very hard to change these things once you get it down. So you want to make sure that you've got it right. And there are a number of things that you can put in that people wouldn't think about. I mean, you look at income tax dependency exemptions. A lot of people don't think about that. Holidays. I mean, you think about the 4th of July. Well, it falls on a weekend this year. Does that mean somebody gets the full weekend? Do they just get Sunday the 4th? I mean, these are things you want to kind of work through with people. And some of it's pretty small, but it can blow up to be a big issue with the parties if it's not addressed.
Now, Denny, in the next half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about the actual court proceedings, and we're going to also talk about social media and how that can impact some of those proceedings. But before we get to that, there's a few phrases that I'd like to just tee up before we move into that next section. Mediation, referees, divorce court judges. What's the difference between those three? Because you hear people going through all three of those, but they're very different in how they are approached.
Yeah, in mediation, I think, is probably the best place to start, Brian, because that's where most people do start. And a mediation is a non-binding procedure where you sit down and you try to settle your case. You use a third party. They're not a judge. They're not a referee. They're typically a lawyer, almost always a lawyer. And basically, they're going to help you try to settle your case. But one thing to keep in mind with a mediator, they're not representing either side here. They're just trying to get a deal done. You know, they're not looking out for your best interest. They're not looking out for the other side's best interest. And that's why you need a lawyer there.
So that's a perfect segue then. In the next half hour, we'll move into the issues regarding divorce court and being before a referee, and we'll take it from there.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you guys about that. A judge, a referee, what does that all mean? We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to Minnesota Law on this Saturday afternoon here on 830 WCCO, presented by Moss and Barnett.
From the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
And this is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett every Saturday in the noon hour here on 830 WCCO. We're talking about family law today, the ABCs of family court. Brian Grogan is our host this afternoon. Jim Vetters with the family law practice area of Moss Barnett. And we were talking about referees and mediators and judges, and maybe we can pick up on that thought.
Yeah, I think Jim had just described to us the process of mediation. But when somebody refers to appearing before a referee versus a judge, what's the distinction between those two?
First and most important, there isn't a big distinction between the two. If you get a referee or a judge on your case, either one of them is going to make binding decisions. So, you know, don't feel that there's a huge difference between the two. It's a pretty small difference when you get right down to it. And really what it is that a judge is an elected or an appointed official. The referee is a hired official. And beyond that, judges countersign referees' orders, but they have the same authority. If you go in front of a referee, effectively that's your judge. It is your judge. They're going to make the decisions in your case. So,
and they all have experience dealing with these issues on a regular basis, so there's nothing lost between the two.
No. In fact, the referees are really quite fantastic, particularly Hennepin and Ramsey County here, which is where they're really used. A lot of them are former family law lawyers and really have a great knowledge of the case or cases and how they should portray out in the law. So really, I like referees. I think referees, judges are great too. I'm very knowledgeable in the law, but you should feel secure going in front of either one. They know the law. They know how to handle the cases.
Now, it's intimidating for people when they think about going to divorce court. You know, they've tried to solve it through settlement. They've probably tried mediation. Somehow it's not been successful. So now you've prepped up the case and you've got to go into court. What can people expect? You know, how should they dress? What should they say? How should they act? I mean, there's got to be some advice you provide to people because this is a whole new atmosphere for them.
Yeah, Brian, that's an excellent question. I so often get asked, all right, I'm going to court. Now what? And some of the commonly asked questions are first are, well, what should I wear? And I tell people, dress is who you are. You know, don't show up. If you're not someone who doesn't wear a suit every day, don't suddenly show up in court in a suit. But dress respectfully. You know, I dress in at least a pair of slacks and a shirt. Remember, the court may not hear from you at a hearing, but they're going to kind of size you up a little bit just in terms of looking at who you are. And if you show up in a T-shirt and a pair of jeans, you're kind of saying to the court, well, you know, this isn't that important to me. So I tell people, dress as you would. If you're somebody who dresses in a suit for work, wear a suit. If you're somebody who doesn't, dress as you would normally, assuming again that you were going somewhere where you wanted to make a good impression.
Now, if I'm sitting in court and I'm trying to be respectful, the judge is sitting up in front of us. What if I hear something that I disagree with? Should I be shaking my head or pounding the table or, trying to let the judge know that this is wrong because nobody's stopping it and people are perhaps lying, at least in my opinion?
And I can almost assure you that in a family law case, you're going to hear things that you disagree with if you go to court. And you shouldn't shake your head. You shouldn't be standing up. You shouldn't be, making any kind of huge gesture that tries to grab the court's attention.
Is that where the professional comes in play?
That is where the professional comes in play. Let your lawyer handle it, because your lawyer's going to get a chance to talk with the judge as well. And I can assure you the other side's going to hear things that they're not going to agree with either. But again, you want to be respectful when you're in that courtroom. You don't want to be talking out of turn. You want to give everybody their chance to speak. The judge needs to, or the referee needs to hear from everybody. And if you're constantly interrupting or, you've got these wild hand movements, the court's not going to appreciate that. And it could impact their decision. So, again, be respectful when you're in there. Let your lawyer handle it. If you want to, pass your lawyer a note. I always tell clients that's the best thing to do. If you really hear something that you think is out of line, pass me a note. But the other thing to remember, a lot of what the judge is going to hear is going to be he said, she said. They weren't there. They don't know who did what for the parenting. They didn't sit down and watch a week of your life and see, all right, here's how they operated inside their house. So, you're going to hear things that you may disagree with, and a lot of it's perception. And if you ask any two people about what their perception was, it's probably going to be different.
It occurred to me, again, as we were prepping for this show, that it really only matters what you look like and what you act like in front of the judge. But that's really not the case, because as you walk into that courtroom, there's going to be court reporters, there'll be officers of the court, clerks, and they all have regular communication with the judge. So what you say and do there, can that actually have an impact on the case?
I think it can. It's not going to have a direct impact, meaning that you're not going to find that in the order. But if during the breaks, when the judge is not sitting up on the bench, if you're acting like a jerk, for lack of a better term, it's going to get back to the judge. They're going to hear about it. The clerk is likely sitting out there, the court reporter, and these people talk. They're human beings. You see somebody out there acting rude or being disrespectful, and it'll get back to the judge eventually.
Now, leading up to to actually going to court, some people might have their deposition taken. And most, I think, of our listeners understand what a deposition is, but maybe briefly describe that and talk to us about how you can prepare for a deposition, because if I understand it correctly, you're going to get grilled pretty hard by opposing counsel, and that could really hurt your case if you're not well prepared for it.
Yeah, you do want to be prepared for a deposition, and a deposition is a situation where the other lawyer sits down and asks questions of the other party. So it's under oath. And it's with a court reporter. They're taking it all down. So there'll be a written record of everything that gets said. And in terms of preparation, what do you do for that? Well, one, you need to know your topics. I always tell people that, knowledge is a huge tool here. Use it. This is your life. You know this better than anybody does. You know it better than the other lawyer does. And that's powerful. Be honest. The worst thing you can do at a deposition is lie. You get caught in that, you lose credibility with the court. Once you lose credibility, because a lot of these things in family law are he said, she said, if you've lost that credibility, then suddenly it becomes either a he said or just a she said, and the judge will go with that. So
among the tools that you're using to prepare that case, you're having depositions, you might have various character witnesses that you're going to bring in. The phrase interrogatories comes up where you're going to be asking the other side for documents. How does that work? How do you request documents? How do you know if you have the full picture about the spouse's income or their holdings?
Yeah, Brian, we'll use discovery to get that stuff, and we'll use the things you've talked about. We'll use interrogatories. We'll use requests for production of documents. We'll use depositions. At the beginning, I said, look, I'm trying to get on the financial end to three pieces of paper, and what I need to do is to find out, okay, what are the assets? And if my client can't tell me what the assets are, then I need to do some discovery to figure out what they are. And if they can't tell me what the income is, well, then I need to get income tax returns. I need to get financial statements. I need to get pay stubs. I need to get something that's going to show me what that income is. And sometimes you get complex assets. You'll get a business. And businesses can be difficult, you know, these little sub-S chapter businesses where, you know, you want to get the core documents to see what the value is. And that can be very subjective. You know, it's very rare that you're going to say this is the value. In fact, that's almost never going to happen. You could have professionals who would very much on what the value of that business could be.
So all of those are tools that you use to prepare the case. You know, it occurs to me that other things that can come in and affect a proceeding is how people conduct themselves during the pendency of these divorce proceedings, what they say about their spouses, what they say about the spouse's parenting skills. You know, if I put together an email criticizing my spouse and that makes it out into the public domain, is that something that could show up in court and hurt me?
It so often does, Brian, and that's a real interesting topic. I mean, you look at these Facebooks, you look at emails, you look at texts, and you look at the impact that these can have on a case. More and more you're seeing people attaching these to affidavits or introducing them as exhibits. And it's interesting because we're in a society now where it seems like everybody has a camera on their phone. And invariably, you go out on a Friday, Saturday night, and you've got a ton of people taking pictures. Well, you've got to be real careful. Where does that picture go to? You know, does it get put up on Facebook, and is it an embarrassing picture of you that could be used at a later thing? That's one thing. The other thing I always worry about, too, is be real careful about what you write. You know, it's real easy to fire off that email. You know, it feels good. You fire it off. It's nasty. It's mean. You know, it really tells the other side what you thought. Suddenly, it's exhibit one in your trial. And you're going, okay, you know, I really didn't mean that. That was a heat of the moment kind of thing. But you really look bad. You know, so you got to be real careful because there are all of these things that are getting out there now that weren't before.
And deleting a text off of your phone doesn't do any good if it's not off your spouse's phone or your daughter's or son's phone, because what you say there can ultimately be discovered as well. So basically, it's not just Britney Spears that has to worry about these photos appearing on the websites. It's all of us that use social media on a daily basis now.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Brian. And like I said, I mean, it's so prevalent now in our society. You know, who doesn't have a phone camera? I mean, just everybody does. I was telling you, I went on vacation, and it seemed like every 20 minutes somebody was taking a picture. Some people you knew, some people you didn't know. And you don't know where it's going to end up at.
Well, I thought you summarized it real well in our preparation conference where you described it that people should take the high road as best they can, no matter what their thoughts are about their spouse, because all of these issues can come out until that settlement is finalized, and ultimately it can have an impact on the children as well.
And, Brian, that's a very good point there. Keep in mind the impact that this ultimately may have on the kids, and the kids know that something's going on. They can sense if the two parents are at each other's throat, and that's not good for the kids. You're going to have to parent your kids for a long time into the future.
I know we have to take a break, and this is, as I hear you both talking about, the both sides. Do they still call it the petitioner and respondent? Is that still the same?
Denny, they still call it
they
petitioner and respondent.
In my limited experience, fortunately, there was only the petitioner in the room. Does that mean things had been settled ahead of time and it was just a formality that the referee was going through the paperwork and the court reporter's there, so it's a limited? So that would have been more successful and quickly done.
Yeah, Denny, it sounds like what you're talking about is a default proceeding where only the petitioner had to show up. The parties had reached an agreement, and basically it was just the court wanted to get a record of it and have the settlement on the record.
Very good. All right, we'll take this break. In Minnesota Law, if you're just joining us, if you're just new to the show, around every Saturday in the noon hour here on 830 WCCO, presented by Moss and Barnett.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Here comes a judge.
Did you know there are presently 19 federal judges assigned in Minnesota and 62 state court judges in Hennepin County?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. Be the first to know. CCO.
And welcome back to this portion of Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. We're talking about family law today, the ABCs of family court. And I know we'll kind of take a look at this topic again, and we'll remind you of that down the road here. But if you're just joining us for the remaining moments of the show, Brian Grogan is hosting today. Jim Vetter is with the family law practice area at Moss and Barnett. And I know we've got a lot more ground to cover, but where can we go from here?
Well, you know, it's never enough time to cover the topic, and every one of these issues we're talking about could be a show in and of itself. But you know, Jim, when you get through this, whether it's mediation or divorce court, ultimately there has to be a written document that describes the rights of each party, and it's going to govern that relationship or I guess the termination of that relationship going forward. You know, what is that document? How does it get prepared? Who reviews it? Maybe walk us through that.
Sure. In Minnesota, we call that document a judgment and decree. And a couple of different ways that it gets prepared. One, if the parties reach agreement, then the attorneys will draft it up. And the parties will have to then sign off on it. And the parties are the only ones who can actually sign the document. They can reach the agreement. You know, the parties will sign off that they, you know, it meets the form of what it should for Minnesota purposes, but it's the parties who have to reach the ultimate agreement. Now, the converse to that is if you go to court, then the judge is going to put that together. And now you've lost control of that document. You know, you've given the judge a draft of what you'd like the judge or referee to do, but the judge ultimately or referee will make their conclusion as to what they want to do with it. That document then becomes your binding court order.
Now, when you're in court, let's assume that you have out of the 10 major issues that you're disputing, you can reach agreements during those proceedings and what we call stipulate to certain issues so that the parties would have at least limited control on those issues that they're able to reach agreement on, leaving the others to the judge. How does that work then?
Well, you'll have limited agreements in then those areas that you can reach agreement on, and you should agree on those areas that you can. We have great judges. We have great referees, but take control of your own life. I mean, that's I always tell clients that. You go to court. You don't know exactly what the judge or referee is going to do. You lose control of it when you give it to them. And we have great judges, great referees, but that can be a frightening process. You know, when you just hand that your life over to somebody else, but particularly on these issues that we've discussed here, kids, finances.
So, I mean, something as simple as separating, you know, household possessions, those are things that clearly the parties ought to be able to stipulate to so the judge doesn't have to decide who gets the Christmas ornaments, right?
Yeah, you definitely.
You've probably seen that.
We have seen that. You know, sometimes you'll see some huge arguments on that. I remember one time there was a huge argument on a fondue kit for the people just neither one was going to let it go. You'd look at it, and there were two attorneys there, and you're saying, "Wait a minute, you guys could buy 100 fondue sets for what you're paying us to argue about
yeah.
this."
Yeah, but have you ever tasted that guy's chocolate fondue? I mean, that's something to write home about. Now, let's assume that you put it in the judge's hand, and that judge she put together a decree or a judgment that you disagree with. You know, you just assume the judge got it wrong. So, what do you do then? They come to you as the attorney. Do you have options for him?
Yeah, you do. You can appeal it, but the key to an appeal is, one, it isn't just that you disagree with it, because you probably do disagree with it. Both sides probably disagree with it. But did they do something that they weren't allowed to do? That's what the Court of Appeals is going to look at. Did this judge make an error in their decision under the law, or was it so outside the facts, you know, that they had the wrong case? And it's not often that the Court of Appeals is going to overturn a case, even particularly a family law case. I mean, these are very fact-driven cases. So,
is part of your job then in that situation, whether it's a case you handled or a case that's brought to you that another attorney handled, you have to look at it and size up, is this financially worth the effort to spend the money to go through an appeal based on the likelihood that you can make enough in an appeal to make it worthwhile?
Yeah, I think there is a cost-benefit analysis on that, and you certainly don't want to spend more than you think the issue is worth. I mean, just by way of example, if there was $1,000 of child support and you thought it should have been $800 and it's only going to last for a year, you're probably going to spend more on appeal than that issue is worth.
Sure.
So, you know, you kind of have to weigh it. You know, you can argue about principle, but principle isn't always a great thing to argue about in family court.
So that's your role, is to counsel people through that then?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're just about out of time. It was a great show. Jim, nice to have you here.
Brian,
Danny, good to see
you
again. And again, now we're going to be doing more next week, by the way. Before I forget, it's going to be an encore presentation. The Best of Minnesota Law. Tom Schreier hosted back in May, Susan Siegel, Minneapolis City Attorney, and Lois Conroy, Assistant Minneapolis City Attorney. They're going to be talking the topic, downtown Minneapolis. There's a new type of sheriff in town. That'll be a week from today, Brian.
And in a couple weeks, on July 17th, Tom Schreier will be back in the hot seat hosting Ed Weiner, Jim's partner over at Moss & Barnett and one of the co-chairs of our family law department. He will be having a show with Gerald Nissenbaum, who is the author of Sex, Love, and Money, Revenge and the Ruin in the World of High-Stakes Divorce. It's going to be a fascinating show. Mm-hmm. Nissenbaum is a top expert on the East Coast in family law, and Ed's one of the experts here, so that should be a really entertaining show.
We'll look forward to that. Thank you both for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good show.